The Christian in Complete Armor, Ephesians chapter 6, verse 15, and your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. Chapter 13, an exhortation to the saints to maintain peace among themselves and promote it to their utmost from three arguments. Use 3. Thirdly, it brings a seasonable exhortation to all the saints that they would nourish peace what they can among themselves. You all profess to have been baptized into the spirit of the gospel, but you do not show it when you bite and snarl at one another. The gospel that makes wolves and lambs agree doth not teach the lambs to turn wolves and devour each other. Our Savior told the two disciples, whose collar was soon up, that they would be fetching fire from heaven to go on their revengeful errand, that they little thought from what hearth that wild fire of their passion came. Ye know not what spirit ye are of. Luke 9:56. As if he had said, such fierce, wrathful speeches do not suit with the meek master you serve, nor with the gospel of peace he preaches to you. And if the gospel will not allow us to pay our enemies in their own coin and give them wrath for wrath, then much less will it suffer brethren to spit fire at one another's face. No, when any such embers of contention begin to smoke among Christians, we may know who left the spark, no other but Satan. He is the great kindle coal of all their contentions. If there be a tempest, not in the air, but in the spirits of Christians, and the wind of their passion be high and loud, it is easy to tell who is the conjurer. Oh, it is the devil that is practicing his black art upon their lust, which yet are so unmortified as gives him too great advantage of raising many times sad storms of division and strife among them. Paul and Barnabas set out in a calm together, but the devil sends a storm after them, such a storm as parted them in the midst of their voyage. Acts chapter 15, verse 39. And the contention was so sharp betwixt them that they departed asunder one from the other. There is nothing, next to Christ in heaven, that the devil grudges believers more than their peace and mutual love. If he cannot rend them from Christ, stop them from getting heaven, yet he takes some pleasure to see them go thither in a storm, like a shadowed fleet severed one from another, and they may have no assistance from, nor comfort of each other's company all the way. Though where he can divide, he hopes to ruin also, well knowing this to be the most probable means to effect it. One ship is easier taken than a squadron. A town, if it can be but set on fire, the enemy may hope to take it with more ease. Let it therefore be your great care to keep the devil's spark from your powder. Certainly, peace among Christians is no small mercy, but the devil's arrows fly so thick at its breast. Something I would fain speak to endure this mercy to the people of God. I love, I confess, a clear and still air, but above all in the church among believers, and I am made the more sensible what a mercy this would be by the dismal consequence of these divisions and differences that have for some years together troubled our air and filled us with such horror and confusion that we have not been much unlike that land called the land of smoke, because of the frequent flashings of lightnings and abundance of smoke found there. What can I compare error to better than smoke, and contention to that than fire? A kind of ember of hell itself, where the flames and darkness meet together to increase the horror of the place. But to press the exhortation a little closer, give me leave to provoke you by three arguments to peace and unity. Section 1. First, for Christ's sake. And methinks, when begging for his sake, I should have no nay. When you pray to God and do not use his name in the business, you are sure to speed. And why should not an exhortation that woos you to Christ's sake move your hearts to duty as a prayer put up by you in his name moves God's heart to mercy? Indeed, how canst thou in faith use Christ's name as an argument to unlock God's heart to thee, which hath not so much credit with thyself as to open thy own heart into the compliancy with the duty which is so strongly set on his heart to promote among his people, as appears. First, by the solemn charge he gave his disciples in this particular, John chapter 13, verse 34, a new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another, and I have loved you, that ye also love one another. I pray observe how he prepares their hearts to open readily and bid this commandment kindly welcome. He sets his own name upon it, a new commandment I give unto you. As if he had said, let this command, though as old as any other, Leviticus 19:18, yet go under my name in an especial manner when I am gone, and the fire of strife begins at any time among you. Remember what particular charge I now give you, and let it quench it presently. Again, observe how he delivers this precept, and that is by the way of gift and privilege. A new commandment I give unto you. Indeed, this was Christ's farewell speech, the very strokings of that milk which he had fed them withal. Never dropped a sweeter discourse from his blessed lips. He saved his best wine till the last. He was now making his will, and amongst other things that he bequeathed his disciples, he takes this command as the Father would do his seal ring off his finger, and gives it to them. Again, thirdly, he doth not barely lay the command before them, but to make it the more effectual, he annexes in a few words their most powerful argument why they should, as also the most clear and full direction how they might do this, that is possible to be given. As I have loved you, that ye also love one another. O Christians, what may not the love of Christ command you, if ye were to lay down your lives for him that loved you to death? Would you deny them? And should not this, his love, persuade you to lay down your strifes and divisions? This speaks enough how much weight he laid upon this commandment. But then again observe how Christ in the same sermon, over and over again, reminds them of this, which if he had not been very solicitous of, should not have had so large a room in his thoughts then, when he had so little time left, in which he was to crowd and sum up all the heavenly counsel and comfort that he desired to leave with them before his departure. Nay, so great weight he lays on this that he seems to lock up his own joy and theirs together in the care that they should take about this one commandment of loving one another. John 15:11. These things have I spoken unto you, that my joy might remain in you, and that joy might be full. What these things were appears by the preceding verse. If ye keep my commandments, ye shall abide in my love. These were the things that he spake of in order to his joy in them and theirs in him, that they would keep his commandments. Now, to let them know how high a place their obedience in to this particular command of love and unity had in his heart, and how eminently it conduced to the continuing his joy in them and filling up their own, he chooses that above any of his instance in order to what he had said, as you may observe verse 12. This is my commandment, that ye love one another. Observe still how Christ appropriates this commandment to himself. This is my commandment, as if he would signify to them that he had one disciple who went by the name of the disciple whom Jesus loved, as he would have a darling commandment, to which he takes some singular delight, and that this should be it, their loving one another. But yet we are not yet at the last link of this golden chain of Christ's discourse. When he hath put some more warmth into their affections to this duty, by exposing his own love to them in the deepest expression of it, even to die for them. Verse 13, then he comes on more boldly, and tells them he will own them for his friends, as they are careful to observe what he had left in charge with them. Verse 14. Ye are my friends, if ye do whatsoever ever I command you. And now, taking it for granted that he had prevailed upon them, and they would walk in unity and love as he had commanded them, he cannot conceal the pleasure that he takes therein, yea, and in them for it. Verse 15. He opens his heart to them, and locks no secret from them, yea, bids them go and open their heart to God, and be free to him as he is to them. Verse 16. And mark from what blessed hour all this familiarity that they are admitted to bear date. From henceforth I call you not servants, for the servant knoweth not what his Lord doeth. That is, from the time that you walk dutifully to me and lovingly to one another. One would think how he had said enough, but he thinks not so. In the very next words he is at it again, verse 17. These things I command you, that you love one another, as if all he had left else in charge with them had been subservient to this. Secondly, a second thing that speaks Christ's heart deeply engaged in the promoting of love and unity among Christians is his fervent prayer for them. Should you hear a preacher with abundancy of vehemency press a grace or duty upon the people in his pulpit, and as soon as the sermon is done, you should go under his closet window and hear him as earnestly wrestling with God that he would give his people what he had so zealously pressed upon them, you would easily believe the man was in earnest. Our blessed Savior hath taught us ministers whether to go when we come out of the pulpit and what to do. No sooner hath he done his sermon to them, but he is at prayer with God for them. And what he insists on most in preaching, he enlarges most upon in prayer. Unity and peace was the legacy he desired so much to leave with them, and this is the boon he puts in strongly with God to bestow on them. John chapter 17, verse 11. Father, keep through thine own power those that thou hast given me. And why all this care? That they might be one as we are. As if he had said, Father, did we ever fall out? Was there ever discord between us? Why then should they who are thine and mine disagree? So, verse 21, and again, verse 23, he is pleading hard with the same mercy. And why so often? It is so hardly raw from God that Christ himself must tug so often for it. No, sure, but as Christ said of the voice that came from heaven, John chapter 12, verse 30, this voice came not from me, but for your sakes. So may I say here, this ingeminated seal of Christ for his people's unity and love was for their sakes. First, he would by this raise the price of this mercy in their thoughts, that sure is worthy their care, which he counted worthy his redoubled prayer, when not a word was spoken for his own life, or else he misplaced his zeal, and improved not his time with God for the best advantage of his people. Secondly, he would make divisions appear more scareful and dreadful things to his people by putting in so many requests to God to prevent them. Certainly, if Christ had known one evil worse than another, like to come upon his people at his departure, he would have been so true and kind to his children as to depreciate that above all and keep that off. He told his children what they must look for at the world's hand, all manner of sufferings and torments that their wit could help their malice to devise. Yet Christ prays not so much for immunity from these as from unbrotherly contentions among themselves. He makes account if they can agree together and be in love, saint with saint, church with church. They have a mercy that will elevate the other and make it tolerable, yea, joyous. This heavenly fire of love among themselves will quench the flames of their persecutors, at least the horror of them. In a word, Christ would so strengthen our faith to ask boldly for that which he hath bespoke for us, so also aggravate the sin of contention to such a height that all who have any love to Christ, when they shall see that they cannot live in strife, but they must sin against those prayers which Christ with strong cries put up for peace and unity, that they may tremble at the thoughts of it. Thirdly, the price that Christ gave for the obtaining of this peace and unity. As Christ went about from preaching up peace to pulling down peace from heaven by prayer, so he went from praying to paying for it. Indeed, Christ's prayers are not a beggar's prayers as ours are. He prays his Father that he may only have what he pays for. He was now on the way to the place of payment, Calvary, where his blood was the coin he laid down for this peace. I confess peace with God was the chief pearl that this wise merchant, Christ, brought up for his people. But he had this in his eye also, and therefore the sacrament of the Lord's Supper, which is the commemoration feast of Christ's death, as it seals our peace with God, so it signifies our love one with another. 1 Corinthians 10. And need I now give you any account why our dear Lord pursued this design so close of knitting his people in peace and unity together? Truly, the church is intended by Christ to be his house, in which he means to take up his rest, And what rest could he take in a house all on fire about him? It is his kingdom, and how can his laws be obeyed if all his subjects be in a hubble one against another? In a word, his church are a people that are called out of the world to be a praise to him in the sight of the nations. As Peter saith, God did visit the Gentiles to take out of them a people for his name. Acts 15, verse 14. That is, a people for his honor. But a wrangling, divided people would be little credit to the name of Christ. Yea, such, where they are found, and where, alas, are they not to be found, they are to the name of Christ as smoke and dirt to a fair face. They dirty and disfigure Christ, so that the world will not acknowledge him to be who he saith he is. They lead them even into temptation, to think basely of Christ and his gospel. John chapter 17, verse 23. Christ prays his people may be made perfect in one, and mark his argument, that the world may know that thou hast sent me. Whose heart bleeds not to hear Christ blasphemed at this day by so many black mouths? And what hath opened them more than the saints' divisions? Section 2. Secondly, the second argument shall be taken from yourselves. For your own sake live in peace and unity. Consider your obligation to love and unity. Your relations call for it. If believers, Paul tells you, your kindreds, Galatians 3:27, ye are all the children of God by faith in Christ Jesus. Not only children of God, so are all by creation, but by faith in Christ Jesus also. Christ is the foundation of a new brotherhood to believers. O Christians, consider how near you are set one to another. You were conceived in the same womb of the church, begot by the same seed of the word, to this new creation, whereby, as one saith, you become brethren to the whole blood, and therefore there should be the more unity and dear affection among you than any other. Joseph's heart went out more to Benjamin than any of the rest of his brethren, because he was his brother, both his father and mother. If you fall out, who shall agree? What is it that can rationally break your peace? Those things which used to be bones of contention, and occasional squabbling among other brethren. Christ hath taken care to remove them all, so that of all others your quarrelings are most childish, yea, sinful. Sometimes one child finds himself grieved at the partiality of his parents' affection more set on some others than himself, and this makes him envy them, and they despise him. But there is no such fondling in God's family. All are dear alike to Christ, Ephesians 5:2. Walk in love as Christ hath loved us, and hath given himself for us, that is, for one as well as another. Christ in the church is like to the soul of the body. He is. Every member in Christ hath whole Christ, his whole heart and love, as if there were none besides himself to enjoy it. Again, among men, though the Father shows not so much partiality in his affection, yet often great inequality in the distribution of his estate. Though all are children, yet not all heirs, and this sows the seed of strife among them, as Jacob found by woeful experience. But Christ hath made his will so, that they are all provided for alike, called therefore the common salvation, Jude 3, and the inheritance of the saints in light, Colossians 1:12, for the community. All may enjoy their happiness without jostling with or prejudicing one of another, as millions of people who look on the same sun, and at the same time, and none, stand in another's light. Methinks that speech of Christ looks a little like this way, John chapter 17, verse 22. The glory which thou gavest me I have given them, that they may be one. By glory there I should understand heaven's glory principally. Now saith Christ, I have given it, that is, in reversion. I have given it them, not this or that favorite, but them. I have laid it out as the portion of all sincere believers, and why? That they may be one, that all squabbles may be silenced, and none may envy another for what he hath above him, when he sees glory in his. It is true, indeed, some difference there is in Christians' outward garb, some poor, some rich, and in common gifts also. Some have more of them, some less. They are these, tandies of such weight to commence a war upon among those that wait for the same heaven? If the father clothes all his children in the same cloth, it were sad to see them stab one another, because one hath a lace more than the other. Nay, because one's lace is red and the other's is green. For indeed the quarrel among Christians is, sometimes, not for having less gifts than another, but because not the same in kind, though another is good and useful, which possibly he wants whom we envy. Secondly, consider where you are and among them. Are you not in your enemy's quarters? If you fall out, what do you but kindle a fire for them in to warm their hands by? Aha! So, would you have it, say they? The sea of their rage will weaken their bank fast enough. You need not cut it for them. The unreasonableness of the strife between Abraham's herdsmen and Lot's is aggravated by the near neighborhood of the heathens to them. Genesis chapter 13, verse 7. And there was a strife between Abraham's herdsmen and the herdsmen of Lot's cattle, and the Canaanites and Perizzites dwelt in the land. To fall out while these idolaters look on, this would be a town talk presently, and put themselves and their religion both to shame. And I pray, who have been in our land, all the while the people of God have been scuffing? Those that have curiously observed every uncomely behavior among them, and told all the world of it, such as have right and malice enough to make use of it for their wicked purposes. They stand on tiptoes to be at work, only we are not yet laid up and disabled by the soreness of those our wounds that we have given ourselves. From withstanding their fury, they hope it will come to that, and then they will cure us of our own wounds by giving one, if they can, that should go deep enough to the heart of our life, gospel, and all. O Christians, shall Herod and Pilate put you to shame? They clapped up a piece to strengthen their hands against Christ. And will not you unite against our common enemy? It is an ill time for mariners to be fighting when an enemy is boring a hole at the bottom of their ship. Thirdly, consider the sad consequences of your contentions. First, you put a stop to the growth of grace. The body may as well thrive in a fever as the soul prosper when on a flame with strife and contention. No. First, this fire in the bones must be quenched and brought into its natural temper, and so must this unkindly heat be slacked among Christians before either can grow. I pray observe that place, Ephesians chapter 4, verse 15. But speaking the truth in love, or being sincere in love, they grow up into him in all things. The apostle is upon a oar showing how souls that at present are weak, and their graces rather wane and wither than growing, may come to thrive and flourish. And the receipt he gives is a composition of these two rare drugs, sincerity and love. Preserve these and all will go well. That's verse 16, where the whole body is said to edify itself in love. There may be preaching, but no edifying without love. Our times are a sad comment upon this text. Sadly, you cut off your trade with heaven at the throne of grace. You will be little in prayer to God, I warrant you, if much in squabbling with your brethren. It is impossible to go from wrangling to praying with a free spirit. And if you should be so bold as to knock at God's door, you are sure to have cold welcome. Matthew 5:24. Leave thy gift before the altar and go thy way. First be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift. God will not have the incense of prayer put to such strange fire, nor will he eat of our leavened bread, taste of any performance he soured with malice and bitterness of spirit. First, the peace was renewed, and a covenant of love and friendship struck between Laban and Jacob. Genesis chapter 31, verse 44. And then, verse 54, Jacob offered sacrifice upon the mount, and called his brethren to eat bread. The very heathens thought no serious business could be well done by quarreling spirits. Therefore, the senators of Rome used to visit the temple, dedicated, because they lay down their feuds and controversies before they went into the Senate to consult of state affairs. Does not they go to the Senate till friends, and dare we go up to God's altar, bow our knees to him in prayer, while our hearts are rolled and swollen with anger, envy, and malice. O God, humble us. Thirdly, as we cut off our trade with heaven, so with one another, when two countries fall out, whose great interest lies in their mutual traffic, they must needs both pinch by the war. Thirdly, Christians, great gains come in by their mutual commerce, and they are the richest Christians commonly, who are seated with the greatest advantage for this trade. As no nation hath all their commodities of their own growth, but needs some merchandise with others, so there is no Christian that could well live without borrowing from his brethren. There is that which every joint supplieth according to the effectual working in the measure of every part. Ephesians 4:16. Paul himself is not so well laid in, but he hopes to get something more than he hath from the meanest of those he preached to. He tells the Christians at Rome, chapter 1, he longs as much to see them as to impart some spiritual gift to them. Verse 11. So saith he, that I may be comforted together with you by the mutual faith both of you and me. Verse 12. Yea, he hopes to be filled with their company. Romans 15:24. As a man is filled with good cheer, he hopes to make a feast of their company. Now, contentions and divisions spoil all intercourse among believers. They are as baneful to Christian communion as a great pestilence or plague is to trade of the market town. Communications flows from communion, and communion that is founded upon union. The church grows under persecution that sheds the seed all over the field and brings the gospel where else it had not been heard of. But divisions and contentions, like a furious storm, washes the seed out of the land with its heart, fatness, and all. Fourthly, you do not only hazard the decay of grace, but growth of sin. Indeed, it shows there is more than a little corruption got into doors already, but it opens the door to much more. James 3. If ye have bitter envying and strife, glory not. That is, do not think you are such good Christians. This stains all your other excellences. Had ye the knowledge and gifts of holy angels, yet this would make you look more like devils than them. He gives the reason. Verse 16. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion in every evil work. Contention is the devil's forge, in which if he can but give a Christian a heat or two, he will not doubt but to soften him for his hammer of temptation. Moses himself, when his spirit was a little hot, spake unadvisedly with his lips. It must needs be an occasion of much sinning which renders it impossible for a man, while in his distemper, to do any one righteous action. The wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. James 1:20. Now what a sad thing it is for Christians to stay long in that temper in which they can do no good to one another but provoke lust. Fifthly, they are prognostics of judgment coming. A lowering sky speaks foul weather at hand. The mariners look for a storm at sea when the waves begin to swell and utter a murmuring noise. Hath there been nothing like these among us? What can we think but a judgment is breeding by the lowering consonants of Christians, their swellings of heart and discontented passions vented from their swollen spirits, like the murmurings of waters or rambling of thunder in the air before a tempest. When children fight and wrangle, now is the time they may expect their fathers to come and part them with his rod. Malachi 4:6. He shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, and the heart of the children to their fathers. Lest I smite the earth with a curse, strife and contention, set a people next door to a curse. God makes it count, he brings a heavy judgment upon a people, when himself leaves them. If the master leaves the ship, it is near sinking indeed, and truly no readier way to send him going than by contentions. These smoke him out of his own house. Be of one mind, saith the apostle, live in peace, and the God of peace shall be with you. 2 Corinthians 13:11. Implying, if they did not live in peace, they must not look to have his company along with them. God was coming in Moses with a great salvation to the Israelites, and as an earnest of good services he was to do for them, he begins to make peace between two discontented brethren as they strove. But his kindness was not accepted, and this was the occasion of many years' misery more that they endured in Egypt. Then fled Moses at the saying, and was a stranger in the land of Meridian. Acts chapter 7, verse 29, and no news of deliverance for the space of 40 years after. Verse 30, and have not our dissensions, or rather our rejecting these overtures, which God by men of healing spirits have offered for peace, been the cause why mercy hath fled so fast from us, and we left to groan under these sad miseries that are upon us this day, and who knows how long? Oh, who can think what a glorious morning shone upon England in that famous Parliament begun 1640, and not wept and wept again to see our hopes for a glorious Reformation that opened with them now shut up in blood and war, contentions and confusions. Miseries, too, like the fire and brimstone that fell from heaven upon those unhappy cities of the plain. Section 3. Thirdly and lastly, our labor for peace and unity for others' sake. I mean those who at present are wicked and ungodly, among whom we live. We are not, saith Augustine, to despair of the wicked, but do our utmost that they may be made good and godly. Because God ever calls his number out to the heap and multitude of the ungodly world. Now, no more winning means to work upon them and pave a way for their conversion than to commend the truths and ways of God to them by the amiableness of your love and unity that profess the same. This is a common seed that would draw souls like doves to the windows. This is the goal, to overlay the temple of God, the church, so as to make all in love with its beauty that look into it. Everyone is afraid to dwell in a house haunted with evil spirits, and hath hell a worse than the spirit of division? O Christians, agree together, and your number will increase. It is said, Acts 2, verse 46, they continued daily with one accord in the temple, and breaking bread from house to house, did eat their meat with gladness and singleness of heart. And mark what follows, verse 47, they had favor with all the people, and the Lord added to the church daily as such should be saved. The world was not so great a stranger to love and peace that it was amused and set to considering what heavenly doctrine that was which could so mortify men's hearts, playing their rugged natures and joining them so close in love together, and were the more easily persuaded to adopt themselves into that true family of love. But alas, when this goal became dim, I mean peace among Christians faded, the gospel lost credit to in the world, and the doctrine of it came under more suspicions in their thoughts, who, seeing such clefts gape in her walls, were more afraid to put their heads under its roof. Canticles chapter 2, verse 7. I charge you, ye daughters of Jerusalem, by the rose and the hinds of the field, that ye stir not up nor wake my love till he please. Master Cotton on the place by the rose and hinds of the field, which are fearful creatures easily scared away, yet otherwise willing to feed with the sheep, takes the Gentiles to be meant inclinable to embrace the Jewish religion, but very soon scared away by the troublesome state of it, or any offensive carriage of the Jews. And what more offensive carriage than divisions and strifes? See them joined together. Romans chapter 16, verse 17. Mark them which cause divisions and offenses. If divisions, then there are sure to be offenses taken, and many possibly hardened in their own sins thereby. Do not your heart tremble to lay this stumbling block for any to break his neck over, to roll the stone over any poor sinner's grave and seal him down in it, that he never have a resurrection to grace here or glory hereafter. As you would keep yourselves free from the blood of those that die in their sins, take heed of lending anything by your divisions to the hardening of their souls in their impenitency. Section 4. Fourthly, the fourth and last sort of peace, which I thought to have spoken of, is a peace with all the creatures, even the most fierce and cruel. I called it a peace of indemnity and service. This Adam, in his primitive state, enjoyed. While he was innocent, all the creatures were innocent and harmless to him. The whole creation was at his service. No mutinous principle was found in any creature that did incline it in the least to rebel against him. When God sent the beasts of the field and fowls of the air to receive names from him, it was that they should do their homage to him and acknowledge him as their Lord, and that he, by exercising that act of authority over them in giving them names, might have an experiment of his perfect, though not absolute and independent dominance over them. But no sooner did man withdraw his allegiance from God, but all the creatures, as if they had been sensible of the wrong man, by his apostasy had done his and their master, by whose patent he held his lordship over them, they presently forget their subjection to him, yea, take up arms in their supreme lord's quarrel against the apostate man. And thus they continue in array against him till God and man meet together again in a happy covenant of peace. And then the commission which God in wrath gave them against rebel man is called in. In the same day that God and the believing soul are made friends, the war ends between him and them. Hosea chapter 2, verse 18. In that day will I make a covenant with them, with the beasts of the field, and with the fowls of the heaven. And mark the day from whence this covenant bears date. In that day, that is, in the day that I betroth thee unto me, so that our peace with the creatures come in by our peace with God. And this being the blessing of the gospel, so much that also. But as our peace with God is not so perfectly enjoined in this life, but God hath left himself at liberty to chastise his reconciled ones, and that sharper too, so our peace with the creatures does not hinder but that they may be, yea, often are, the rod which God uses to correct them with. The water may drown one saint, and the fire consume another to ashes. And yet these creatures at peace with these saints, because they are not sent by God in wrath against them for any real hurt that God means them thereby. This indeed was the commission that he gave all the creatures against the apostate man as part of his curse for his sin. He sent the creatures against him, as a prince does his general, against the company of traitors in arms against him, with authority to take vengeance on them for their horrid rebellion against their Maker. But now the commission is altered and runs in a more comfortable strain. Go fire and be the chariot in which such a saint may be brought home from earth to me in heaven's glory. Go water, wait for another. And so of all the rest, not a creature comes on a worse message to a saint. It is true they are sharp corrections as to the present smart they bring, but they are ever mercies and do a friendly office in the intention of God and happy issue to the believer. All things work together for good to them that love God. Romans 8:28, and the apostle speaks it as a common principle, well known among the saints. We know that all things work, etc. As if he had said, where is the saint that doth not know this? And yet, it were happy for us if we knew it better. Some of us would then pass our days more comfortably than now we do. But I intend not a discourse of this. Let brevity here make amends for prolixity in the former. End of chapter 13, having been read by Peter John Parisius.